This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is Robin Roberts, and the Michael K. Show starts right now. Take it away, Michael, Don, and Peter.
Thank you, Robin, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on a rainy Tuesday. It's October 26, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that's your responsibility. I'm out of breath right now. It's unbelievable the things that come at you. So we have our little pre-show meeting, and I have the door locked to where I do the show. Well, not locked. It's closed. And the kids are at school. Jody's out. And Butter just bats her head against the door, opens it up.
Okay.
And then goes up and grabs a chocolate protein bar in her mouth and runs away. I can't let her eat chocolate, so I'm running around the house.
Oh,
and
now no.
I finally caught her and gave her a milk bone to trade for the chocolate bar. It's amazing.
So Butter has you the same way the kids do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to bribe her with milk bones to not eat chocolate.
Right.
Wow. You right. guys really have things under lock and key.
What in the world am I doing?
I really thought about it last night. You're really annoying, Peter.
Me?
Very judgmental. I don't know if Michael feels the same way, but
oh,
you've got
no.
some nerve.
Oh,
Mr.
No.
Single Man About Town sitting there from up in your ivory tower discussing and criticizing about the way that we decide to parent our children and deal with our pets. You've got some blanking nerve. I think I speak directly for Michael that I want to really pulverize you right now.
You know what? We should back
judging,
off on this.
Pointing.
And there's Butter jumping up on the desk now.
Really?
Butter, no. Butter, get down. Unbelievable. But everybody thinks that I'm being, you know, Peter and I don't like each other. And so a lot of people are saying I tune into the show to be happy and to get away from this all. And there's so much constant strife between you two. It's turning me off. So.
Is that true?
Yeah, I got a couple of those tweets yesterday. So, I mean, I don't like you that much the last couple of weeks, but I'm not going to manifest it.
Well,
that's,
I mean,
that's
listen,
very
people
selective because Peter, don't you get a lot of reaction on Twitter how people just love when we go at each other?
Yeah, I mean, by the way, do these people who get upset about this stuff, they don't have friends and family? I mean, this is what friends and family are. Sometimes you fight. Sometimes you get along. Sometimes there are some subjects you're in lockstep, and sometimes there are subjects where you want to kill each other. It's just that's family.
No, this is more than that. I mean, I have a white-hot distaste for you this last week. I don't know why.
Wow.
I've never felt like this about a family member.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I never heard of anything like that being held back, and it'd be good for radio.
Yeah, nice. We're just trying to do the best job we can and let people enjoy this experience, this
That's
family
right.
experience. And Michael, you know what? I did want to say, I would like, thank you. The other day, we got into a bit of an argument. You and I went back and forth. Some things were said.
Pipe down,
big kid. I'd like to apologize and offer you the following poem. Every day is so wonderful, and suddenly it's hard to breathe. Now and then, I get insecure from all the pain, feel so ashamed. You are beautiful, no matter what they say. Words can't bring you down. You are beautiful in every single way. Yeah, words can't bring you down. How does this end?
We all die. Well,
that sounded very familiar.
I wrote it down.
If it was heartfelt, I'd accept it. It's not heartfelt, so I dismiss it.
The point is, I'm sorry, okay? I know we've been going at it a little bit the last couple of weeks. You guys have been attacking me quite a bit. I'm also getting attacked by other shows on the station. I have a lot of people coming at me all the time. So if I lash out, I want to apologize. I'll do my best to keep it together.
Well, you speak of other shows.
Sure.
So DPHR and Rothenberg, they responded to the RJ gift fiasco. And here's what they said.
I don't know what to say. All the guy had to do was bring a check and put it into the box that's sitting there. And look what he's made a meal out of this thing now.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly not concerned about RJ.
But I don't think it's RJ specific. RJ, I don't want you to feel away. He did the same thing to Ben in his bar mitzvah.
Right.
I wouldn't have said anything. The lack of gift that he gave, he brought it up on air, and he got destroyed for that. If he doesn't give RJ, who he loves, a really beautiful, genuine, enormous gift, he's making a big mistake.
Now, here's where I will, I guess, take the other side.
Of course you're going to defend him, because you're such a nice guy.
Well, there are still cards rolling in. And you know, we're not running a for-profit wedding industry here. It, you know, at this point, it is what it is. It's actually been 2 months on Friday. So there are still cards that I'd say one a week we get one. So what he said, which I didn't know was a thing, the one month or one year to send a gift.
Nobody takes a year.
Because it's not.
Thank you, RJ. Thank you.
Well, I know one thing. The way I ended the show yesterday, I immediately, and this never happens, Don, got a text from RJ. What a great ending to the show.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, he was so I feel I've lost RJ at this point too.
Yeah, that's like losing Cronkite.
Yeah, you can't lose RJ, and it does feel like at this point I've lost RJ because he texted me after the show too. He seemed to really enjoy it.
Yeah,
and the theme of the end was that I'm a bad guy and RJ should hate me. So the fact that RJ then liked it,
right?
It's like liking a tweet about someone negative,
right? You always have to watch where you hit that heart.
I just can't believe that no good SOB Rothenberg has the nerve to bring up the gift for the bar mitzvah that, in my opinion, was totally reasonable for a kid I've never met in my life.
What, you gave him $18?
I gave him, I don't remember. It was a denomination of 13, wasn't it?
Right, yeah.
No, 18.
Of 18. It was $180. Was that right?
No, I think it's 13, isn't it?
No, it's 18.
No, it's 18. It's 18. What, anyone remember? It was it 118? Maybe I gave it 118.
118 is not a denomination of 18. Stop
so
it.
Then maybe it was 180. Yeah. And that was seen to not be enough. Whatever the number was, I was told it wasn't enough for a kid who I think I'd met before that day one time in my life.
I'd never met him before, and I gave 500. So, I mean, and you have as many jobs as I have.
By the way, you're I got to tell you, and I don't care what Don says. I think Don will agree with me. 500 for a bar mitzvah for a kid you've never met is maniacal. You should be institutionalized. You shouldn't have. Don, are you with
me?
Boy,
that apology lasted a while, didn't it, Don?
I think that's what I gave.
500 for a bar mitzvah?
What do you think we were invited for? Not because we're close friends. We don't know Ben. We're invited to give the kid money.
Well, I just don't want to play in the reindeer games then. Don't invite
then
me.
Then don't go.
But I didn't know that because I grew up around genuine good people. I've never grown up around monsters like this who invite people for money. I swear to God, for my bar mitzvah, my dad's boss, who was a United States congressman at the time, he gave me a Cleveland Browns turtleneck sweatshirt and a matching hat. I thought it was the best gift.
I was like,
oh my God, it must have went for $75. I thought it was tremendous.
How about this, Don? I'm just told that on the show, DiPietro and Rothenberg, they also said that Dave's son's friends refer to him as the guy who doesn't give gifts. Refer to Peter as the guy who doesn't give gifts.
Oh, I got
to
tell you, so I will walk. I will punch every one of those 13-year-olds directly in the gut. if they so much as ever in their life say a word about that, I'll punch them right in the gut, each and every one of them.
Well, sounds good to me.
That's what you're teaching kids to complain about $180 from a stranger?
First of all, they're not kids. At 13, they had a bar mitzvah. They're men. And I think they could beat you up.
Well, that's fine. Press your luck. If
Peter
you feel
Tamarkin
lucky
vehicle.
Duck, then press your luck.
The Peter Tamarkin vehicle. All right. So let's start with the Giants today after we just eviscerated Peter. There seems to be – there was a big story by Paul Schwartz. Paul Schwartz is really good. Been doing it a long time. Covers the Giants for the Post. Have the Giants found their quarterback in Daniel Jones? Now you can say, oh, I mean, come on. It's not early. As Yogi would say, it's getting late early because this is the third year. You have to make a decision. It's, you know, hit or get off the pot. I mean, that's all there is to it. And I will tell you this. Andrew sent us numbers previous to the show beginning, and the numbers aren't glittering.
Well, hey there.
But sometimes you do have to trust your eye. How could the numbers be glittering when he's had a shell of the team that he's supposed to have? I watch these games. They're not 2-5 because of him. I think there's something there. Now, do I believe he's going to be an elite quarterback, which means top five? No, I probably don't. But is he going to be the top half of quarterbacks? I do believe that he's in the top 16. And I don't think that you could give up on that. Let's say he's the 12th best quarterback in the NFL. Well, who the heck are you to say we're going to give up on him and we're going to reach for a top five? How often do you get a top five? Sometimes you got to make do with a top 12, a top 13. I think this guy is the guy moving forward. His teammates like him. He's got a good arm. He runs well. He's had one game this year where the turnovers returned. But bottom line, Don, I'm not getting greedy and saying, well, if he's the 12th best, I want the second best quarterback. Oh, good luck finding that guy.
Yeah,
how many teams find that guy?
And you need a good quarterback to win a Super Bowl. I firmly believe that. But you don't need the best quarterback to win the Super Bowl. I mean, the Giants were able to win Super Bowls with a quarterback that probably you could argue was whether he's breaking the top 10. Now, you need great quarterback play, and I think your quarterback has to be very good. You're not going to get by anymore with the Trent Dilfers of the world. But does that mean that unless you have a top five quarterback, you just throw it away and start all over again? Now, the Jets did it because you had a new regime, and they were in a very rarefied air of going from having the third overall pick when they drafted Darnold to having the second overall pick when they drafted Wilson. I don't know if the Giants are going to be in that situation. Even if they traded their pick and the Bears pick, are they going to be able to get up that high? Is there a quarterback that you're salivating over when you get to the draft? And are you just going to reset for going through the same thing that you have with Jones right now?
Well, if you look at Mel Kiper's rankings, Don, he's not high on any quarterbacks coming out. So what would the Giants do? Deshaun Watson? Do you think they'd go that route?
I mean,
no.
Not unless we got some new information.
The only way they're going to get a top five quarterback is to have a guy be a free agent. Never happens in the NFL. Or get a really old quarterback like Rodgers, who might have 3 years left, and he decides, you know what, I want to make my star even brighter in New York. Well, like what Tom Brady did with Tampa Bay. They just don't come loose that much.
Well, and they're not – this team's not good enough for Aaron Rodgers. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Right.
They're not close enough.
But you don't think – let's say – I don't know, where are the Giants going to pick this year?
Probably in the middle.
Say they well
higher than the middle, I'd say.
Yeah, well, say they finish 6-11. What is that going to get you?
Probably 10.
They're picking 6? 10. No, 7.
All right, well, and where are the Bears going to finish?
Where's who going to finish?
The Bears.
About the same.
Because the Giants have the Bears pick. So if the so you don't think it's possible the Giants could take like the 9 and the 7 pick and move up? Now, I don't know if the Giants and Jets would ever make a trade, but what if the Jets end up with the first or second overall pick again? They're not going to take a quarterback. The Jets might decide to trade down to get a couple of first-round picks, and the Giants can maybe find themselves in the top 3 to be able to draft a quarterback. Now, Mike Tannenbaum says there isn't any great quarterbacks, but was anybody talking about Zach Wilson a year ago today?
No.
You know, so could we finish the college football season? Maybe somebody emerges? And usually when you get later into the season, into the offseason, where all of a sudden everybody's falling over themselves. Baker Mayfield wasn't talked about in October of the year he was drafted. Zach Wilson wasn't talked about in October of last year. So they might be in a position to take a quarterback. But who's making that selection? If the Giants go outside the organization to replace Gettleman, if they indeed do replace him, is it going to be the same philosophy the Jets had? Let's get rid of all of Gettleman's guys.
That's why they have to be careful. If they do replace Gettleman, they have to replace somebody of like mind. If you really believe in Daniel Jones, because we see it with what they did, what the Jets did. I think the Jets made the right decision because I don't think Sam is a top half quarterback. Zach Wilson might be. We'll see. But you're starting all over again. You're starting all over again if you get a neophyte quarterback. I mean, maybe you get a guy like Russell Wilson. He might shake loose from Seattle and say, I want to go. I mean, that would be a quarterback that would change things. That's a top 7 quarterback. But what's the likelihood?
Well,
right now, if the season ended right now, guys, Giants would have the 7th pick and the Bears would have the 15th pick. I think things are going to get worse for the Bears, though.
Yeah,
Justin Fields
doesn't look like he's
ready. Yeah.
Yeah, there's plenty of time.
That could very easily be 2 top 10 picks and they can move up. But they're not going to get a Wilson. Why would Wilson come here? Why would Rodgers come here?
Yeah, they're not close enough.
Why would Watson come here if he was if he became available? Honestly, Watson just said he didn't want to go to Philadelphia. Why would he want to come to New York? It's not like the Giants are a quarterback away from winning a championship.
That's the thing.
They got no offensive line. Their defense is in shambles right now. We have no idea if they've got the right coach. No offense to Michael's stance that he's going to the Hall of Fame, but Joe Judge is certainly somebody that isn't a surefire, I want to play for that guy coach yet.
Well, that train has slowed down on my track, but
well,
it's still headed there.
No, it's definitely slowed to the point where if you're an established quarterback looking to go someplace else for a fresh start and win a championship, the Giants aren't going to be your destination. So the only way they're replacing Jones is through the draft. And I think there's been enough there to believe that you can move forward with him if you can get the right pieces. They did a good job getting him weapons. Now they got to just figure out how to correct this offensive line.
Yeah, it's a mess. That's why when you look at Daniel Jones' numbers, you got to look at them on a little bit of a curve. He's getting no protection. None. And he's been sacked 14 times in 7 games. And it should be more, but he actually is nimble and can get away from the rush. Mm. He has no protection whatsoever, and all of his weapons are hurt.
Right. He hasn't had everybody at full strength, I think, pretty much all year, right? If you want to count Barkley as full strength in the opening day.
No, not the first. Well, I mean, the first 3 games that Barkley played, was he a top flight running back? No.
No, I don't think so. And then they started dropping like flies after that. So, hey, I'm not going to sit here. There was a guy on Twitter yesterday that confused what I said. I said that he could be a top 7 or 8 quarterback, and he thought I said that he is a top 7 or 8 quarterback. He's not. But I do think with an offensive line, another year, if they moved forward and kept him, could I see Daniel Jones being a top 10 quarterback in this league? I do. The skill set seems to be there. I don't think it's good enough that he'll ever be the best quarterback in the league, but I think you can make it to where you can win with him if you do the right things. I think there's some talent there. I know he's fumbled the ball 5 times. He hasn't lost them all. Some of that's come with the pressure. Some of that he's got to learn to hold on to the ball. But outside of that Ram game, he is protected not throwing interceptions, which is the biggest knock you've had on him.
I don't know. I don't see. I mean, I looked at Sam Darnold last year and I go, you know what? I could see why you're going to move away from him. I could see it. I can't see what Daniel Jones has done to deserve that kind of heading. I'm sorry. He's pretty good.
Yeah, because your argument with Sam was, I don't see it. But I think you've seen flashes with Jones, right? You've seen moments where he looks like a very good quarterback in this league.
Yeah,
solid.
Absolutely.
Solid.
So, yeah, again, the best compliment I can pay Peter is that he can be a very good quarterback. But I think you, as important as the quarterback position is, I think you could win with a very good quarterback. If all you're going to do is try to go for elite,
Well, Don,
your tail for 2 decades.
You have a good memory for this stuff. What's the last team that won a Super Bowl with not an elite quarterback? Not Trent Dilfer. I mean, a
middle
recent
of the road.
Who?
You middle
of the road.
Of the road?
Yeah, like 10th or 12th best quarterback.
Probably Flacco.
Yeah.
Is there somebody more recent?
Well, Flacco wasn't that long ago. It was within
How about,
last...
yeah, Nick Foles?
Yeah, Nick Foles would fall in that category.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then you think of quarterbacks that went, you know, maybe that have gone to Super Bowls, you know, Matt Ryan. Could
Garoppolo?
He be a Matt Ryan?
I think Matt Ryan's pretty good.
But Matt Ryan might be a 10.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But, all right, so Flacco, which was what year? That was like, what, 10 years ago? 2012, so not even 10. So over the last 10 years, Flacco, Foles.
And Garoppolo took them to the Super Bowl, right? But they didn't win.
Right, they didn't win.
Right.
And he was awful in the second half. Peter's favorite Super Bowl were a broken down Peyton Manning one.
How about Goff? Goff is might not even be top 10.
You know, Goff went, didn't win, but he did go.
He was there.
Yeah, so, and I think Cam. Right now, a Giant fan would sign for going to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Cam at the time, though, was really good.
Yeah, he was
that
MVP.
He was elite that season. Very elite.
All right, we're going to take phone calls on this because I think it's interesting. I think people are making judgments too quickly in football. I mean, there's you know, when the Giants had that awful game last week, not this Sunday, the previous week, Judge is gone, he has to go.
Yeah,
you can't do that in football. It's not the way to run a football team. It's the way the Jets run their team. It's not the way to do it. You can't keep – and the Giants, too. The Giants have given up on two coaches after 2 years. But, it's ridiculous.
Right. It's ridiculous, Michael, but the reason it's all on the table is if Gettleman goes and they go outside the organization, don't you think that the quarterback and the head coach are going to be
in
a problem there?
I think they will bring in a GM that likes the coach and the quarterback. They'll hire according to that.
Well, then they might as well just promote from within then.
Right. They might do that. All right, so I've just received really disturbing news.
Oh, no.
Go ahead.
This, to me, is unbelievable. I mean, all the joking aside, Dave Rothenberg just texted or tweeted, he's lying. Because you said you gave 100, he gave way less and bragged about it.
Hold on. Said
he intended to give that amount, but decided he wanted to save cash for the upcoming week. And then DiPietro, Don, before we let Peter even address it, DiPietro said, fact, he gave $36.
Okay. Well, so now we're just lying. So now, this is where we are now. Don, did you not hear me on the air struggling to remember what
he did not remember.
I could not remember. I know what it is.
But did you
$36?
You gave $36, buddy.
You really believe that?
Well, that's what DiPietro's telling me.
I will punch every one of those 13-year-olds directly in the gut.
That's a derivative of 18. That works.
That does work.
I assure you, it was over $100 and a denomination of 18.
Well, why is Rothenberg saying you're lying?
Well, maybe it wasn't 180. Maybe it was one.
You said 180. He said he gave way less and bragged about it.
Hold on. I just sat here and said I'm having trouble remembering what the amount was. So it could have been less than 180, but it was 1,000% over 100 and a denomination of 18, okay?
Yeah, no, really?
Now you see what these people are about. No. Rick's now just saying I gave $36.
That's what he said.
Here's why $36 is a talking point. I don't know much. I don't know much about bar mitzvahs.
No, you're not Jewish.
So I treated it like a wedding. Like, well, I got to pay for the plate. I got to come up with something good. And if you remember that week, Peter's like, no, that's not the way it is. This is a bar mitzvah. You come up with a denomination of around 18. And then you told me the story about what you got for yours. And you made it seem like it would be perfectly okay if I came in there with like a Giants baseball cap and wrapped it and gave it to him. That'd be perfectly acceptable. Like, that's the atmosphere that you gave about like what a gift is supposed to be. So that's why 36 sounds believable, because your attitude it's not a wedding.
It's not. Like,
it's a glorified birthday party.
That's right.
So just come with a gift that's nice but not excessive.
Listen, I obviously see that I've lost Don because he's willing to say that there's a chance I gave $36.
But not in a sense. No. I'm defending you in the sense that – you're trying to say is it's not a wedding. You don't go over the top. It's insulting to go over the top.
But wait, Peter, you know that there are a lot of bar mitzvahs. I mean, dads will pay to bring in Adele to sing. They're not just birthday parties.
Yeah, guess what? I didn't see Adele at the Rothenberg bar mitzvah, okay? Come on. They saved a few bucks. It was on a Sunday, for God's sake. But
that was a great event.
It was beautiful. It was a wonderful event. And I actually really had a great time. It was the last time I saw everyone before everything shut down. It was an absolute ball. I definitively gave over $100, which to me, in my lifetime of being bar mitzvahed and going to bar mitzvahs for someone you're not close to, is a totally acceptable amount of money. The fact that these people are running on this show, on DCR, whatever the show's called these days, the fact that these people are running
these... There's no C anymore.
The fact that these people are running party scams to make money...
Rub my glutes.
It's upsetting. I can't believe that he's saying this. I, you know what? And again, it's all a distraction. These people got excited about and got on the air and confidently on a sports talk show, confidently picked the Kansas City Chiefs. No one talks about that. All we talk about is this money, because when it comes down to doing our job and talking sports, I'm making them both look stupid. They look foolish, wow. And they're getting crushed by the guy who's not supposed to know sports. So, Don, what do? They change the whole narrative, and everyone's falling for it. I gave Dave's lovely boy some amount over $100. If him and his friends want to sit around and call me the guy who doesn't give gifts, that's fine. What they should call me is the guy who knows more about sports than his father. That's what he should call me. Because the man couldn't pin a pick on the donkey. It's a joke, and he's changed the subject now. Sorry, pal. I'm here to remind you what's really going on. This show is kicking your show's rear end, and you want to talk about bar mitzvah gifts. Stop. I will not allow the narrative to be changed.
Wow, Don. Oh, wow.
That's really nothing left.
I will tell you this.
We've said it all.
I think you cleaned your plate.
I have not even announced this, but I will now. In 2031, Jody and I will be married 20 years. We're going to renew our vows. We're going to have it, the reception, the same place we had the wedding reception. I don't think that you can be invited. You're not going to come close to the number on the plate. So 10 years in advance, just get ready for it.
How much do rich people expect at a vow renewal?
I'm not rich.
All right. Well, see,
Steve Cohen is rich.
You know what,
I'm not rich.
I realize everyone here is comfortable lying, so how do I have arguments with people? When everyone's comfortable lying and I'm telling the truth, what can I do?
I don't even really think do you bring a gift to something like that?
Apparently, Don, you have to or you're unfriended for life.
Tim Ramsdale said you gave $36 and an old Browns jersey. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number. Daniel Jones, is he your guy or not? Peter, is he cheap or not? Rothenberg, you believe him or not? Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg and you, right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
I don't care about your children. Rub my glutes.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it all comes down to the Breeders' Crown presented by the Libfield Cats Breeding Partnership on Friday, October 29th and Saturday, October 30th at the Meadowlands Racetrack. This $6.6 million year-end series has 12 championship events over 2 days with a 6:20 p.m. post time on Friday and 12 noon post time on Saturday. You can even swing by the Pink Lounge on the second floor to see Anita Marks broadcasting live from noon to 3 on Saturday. Events, racing, and dining details can be found online at playmeadowlands.com and breederscrown.com. Before we go back to the phones, Don.
Yes.
I know time has changed. Times have changed, especially in sports. There's no more cooking a stew. Everything has to be microwaved.
Yep.
Phil Simms would never have become Phil Simms.
No.
Ever. Right?
No.
It took him 5 years to hit a stride.
They would have gotten rid of him when Bill Parcells named Scott Bruner the quarterback.
Right.
And when Bruner was the quarterback, actually got him to the playoffs in 81, they would have traded Phil. But there was no cap at the time, so it was okay to kind of keep those players. And you think of the Giants lineage of backup quarterbacks, you know, Jeff Hostetler, Jeff Rutledge. These are quality quarterbacks. They were able to kind of keep and hang around because there was no cap. But in this day and age, yeah, Phil Simms, injury prone. Bill gives the job to Scott Bruner. Like I said, he made the playoffs in 81, and then when Parcells took over in 83, gave the job back after another injury-plagued 82 for Phil. Yeah, Phil would be gone. He'd be done. You know, the second greatest quarterback, or third, depending on where you want to rank Wyatt Tittle and Eli Manning, would be playing someplace else.
Right. May not even get a chance. But we live in different times now. Because everything, hey, that's why you fire coaches after 2 years. That would never happen, ever.
And when when the cap comes in, then they let Phil go.
Right.
You know, and they had to make a decision, like, and they ended up trading Jeff Hostetler away to allow Phil Simms to stay. Like, so yeah, that's when you started to see things change. But back then, you know, Phil would have been gone. And you think of other quarterbacks. if we really thought about it, that probably would have would the 49ers have been able to have the luxury of keeping Steve Young around while Joe Montana was playing?
No, no way. Absolutely no way. Let's go to Mel in New Jersey. Mel.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon, man. I want to say this conversation is insane to me, thinking that Daniel Jones got to be put in a way that we can't keep him. Number one, we watch him play. You know, it's not like he's throwing he's sorting in his throws or anything like that. He's giving them to the receivers. Now, I just feel like we got to have better talent around him. Look at Kyle Murray. He got D-Hop. He got A.J. Green. Look at your guy in Buffalo. He got Stephon Diggs, you know. As long as we put a team around him, I feel like he's going to be great. He's one of the fastest quarterbacks in the league, too, picking up like 21 miles per hour. If we can't have somebody like the next Lamar Jackson, I think we'd be fine with him.
I agree with you, Mel. I think people that are harshly judging this guy, how does a quarterback without an offensive line? And the last 4 weeks, with all of these guys injured, he had to be his best receiver last week. He had to be his best runner and the best quarterback. That's a lot of baggage for a third-year guy. And, you know, when you talk to people that are in that room, players love him. Players respect him. He's tough. Never throws anybody under the bus. He's like a little mimeograph copy of Eli.
He really is.
He talks like him, sounds like him. Yeah, I don't think he's the problem. Let's go to Bill in the Bronx. Bill.
Miguel.
What up?
Pedro. Y el Don La Greca. K, what's up, dudes?
All good. How about you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I'm doing well. I'm a blast from your past, Michael. I don't know if you remember me, but I'm a blast from your past.
Okay.
First of all, Michael, I have to ask you a question that has nothing to do with the Giants, and then I'll get to the Giants.
Okay.
When you were watching the Nick game in the nude, right,
mm-hmm.
and you were excited, right?
Right.
Were you at attention or at ease?
Oh, stop. Bill. I can't let him go on. I mean, if that's where his starting point
that's
is.
That's where he started.
That's where he started. Where was it going to end?
You got to be worried about that.
All right.
Now, he's a blast from your past, Michael. You care to tell us anything?
Yeah, I have no idea who he is.
I don't know if you want to revisit that past. I got to tell you, though, you did the right thing. You had to disconnect the call. It was not going well.
No.
But fabulous question.
No, it's not a fabulous question because that's not why you get nude. People don't understand that. No.
Yeah, I don't.
Because it's freeing. And you can enjoy life that way. Doesn't mean you have to get excited about what's happening that way.
Yeah, but that's how I look at it.
Well,
see, that's
you know
why
what?
I don't
because
associate
you're a sicko.
The nakedness with the sports. Like the sports, I don't mix the two. You know, I'm good with sports and then I want to move on to something else, I move on to something else.
Right. Gotcha.
But you're trying to incorporate the two, I would think, with the nudity. But you're bringing nudity into an area that just I don't get.
Right. I hear you, Don. It's confusing. It's unsettling.
Well, people are on board.
It's hard to not think about nudity in that way. But you've found another way to enjoy being naked, which,
yes.
I don't get, but I admire that you found that.
Thank you.
Good for you.
Thank you. Good for me. You know what else is good for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Passan joins us next. You know, we got a World Series that's starting tonight. I only hear clapping from one person.
No, I was clapping too. You just couldn't hear it.
Really? Fix that!
Peter, no, actually, that was Peter clapping because he's going to appreciate the break.
No, I got to talk to Passan today. Today's the most Jewish World Series in history.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I saw you tweet about this.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm dialed in.
Yeah, that's why people tune into the show. What's the most Jewish sporting event in history? That's why they come to this show. Jeff Passan will join us in just a moment to break down Braves Astros right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Well, 98.7 ESPN is giving away up to $2,000 every week this football season with the Pigskin Payout. Your faith in gangrene and Big Blue is your ticket to cash in, just like Jack Watson from Verona, New Jersey, did last week when he won $1,000 thanks to the Giants win over the Panthers. So
yeah.
Get your bets ready. Be listening in the 5 p.m. hour today for your chance to win. We're raising the stakes with DiPietro and Rothenberg and The Michael K. Show, only on 98.7 ESPN, your home for football. We touched on this yesterday. It was such a busy football Monday that we didn't get a chance to really explore. But Bob Klapisch, who is as good a baseball columnist as there is in the entire country, he just is, writing in the Star Ledger, wrote a long column about what the Yankees would need to do moving forward and, you know, bringing aboard a veteran pitching guru like a C.C. Sabathia or a David Cone. Also in that column said that there was an incident around June in the Yankee clubhouse where this is when the major leagues decided to crack down on the sticky stuff. And Brett Gardner was parading around the clubhouse. This is I'm approximating the words that Bob used, with a hat with pine tar smeared all over it. And Gerrit Cole didn't like it and confronted him, right, got right in his face, and they had a little bit of an argument. And then a couple of days later, Gerrit Cole apologized to Gardner. So a lot of people want to say, oh, either side is wrong. Well, one side's wrong, the other side's not. Well, first of all, I don't know why Cole would have reacted that angrily to a guy who's known to play pranks in the clubhouse and is the veteran Yankee on the team. Now, on the other side, I don't know why Brett Gardner would go there, especially if he knew that this was something that might impact Gerrit Cole. So I don't think either of them get a pass on this, but probably cooler heads should have prevailed. And then the other story, part of the story where Bob wrote that, you know, Joey Gallo lays down his uniform in front of the locker before a game and puts it on a couple of times. Takes it on, puts it on, takes it on. And, you know, people meant that as like Bob intimating that that was the reason that Gallo hit 160. It wasn't. You know, what I think Klapisch was showing is that Gallo's a little bit quirky. He didn't comment on it one way or the other. The thing that kind of exploded it a little bit was that Gallo sent out a tweet, said, yeah, I get dressed, the media, and that's why I, rather than use a pejorative term, that's why I stink. He shouldn't have gone there. You know, just let it be. Let's say, hey, I have OCD, and this is something to have to deal with. He could have turned it into a positive if that's in fact what's happening. Instead, he turned it into a defensive position like, oh, that's why I stink. Of course, put it out that I put on a uniform off and on for a couple of times. All of it, to me, Don and Peter, yeah. I don't know if you guys feel like it, kind of a nothing burger. I don't know. I don't know if you guys feel differently.
Well, listen, we thirst for wanting to know the different quirks and things that go on about ballplayers. I brought up yesterday the fact that Wade Boggs ate like chicken all the time and what somebody ate before games and what they do after games. Like, it's quirky stuff that I think fans kind of appreciate. No, I don't think Bob was going after Gallo saying this is a reason why they got to get this freak out of here. It does show me that Gallo's very sensitive about it, that he took that leap, and maybe he isn't right for New York, but that's on him. This reeks to me, guys.
No pun intended.
That it's got to be a tough clubhouse. It must – people just be walking on eggshells there. When you're expected to win, and they probably feel failure more than any other team in baseball because they're expected to win a championship every year, and I think it just shows the pressure. And maybe that's all that Brett was trying to do, because Brett had been here forever, right? So he probably knew that it was something that was going to create a lot of tension, so he tried to make kind of fun of it, lighten everybody up. And then Cole probably showed the reason why he was trying to lighten everybody up, because he lit up Gardner because he probably was too sensitive about it, made too big of an issue about it. But that's what ends up happening when there's so much tension in the room. There's infighting. People take things the wrong way. It's difficult to have fun when there's only one possible way to succeed, and that's winning a championship. And I think it speaks to the tension in the room.
And that was one the main reason that, other than the fact that he's an extraordinary pitcher, that's why Brian Cashman went out and said C.C. Sabathia was a guy he had to have to fix the clubhouse. Now, we don't know what's going on in the clubhouse. For 2 years, we haven't been allowed right in there because of health protocols. But I will tell this, for those that are wondering, well, how do stories like that get out? Well, get a little closer to the speaker, I'll tell
you. There we
go.
Lean in.
When you fire three coaches, they tend to get a little chirpy.
Oh, yeah.
They'll tell you, because we haven't been in the room. So where do you think that comes from? You think Brett Gardner told Bob? You think Gerrit Cole told Bob? No. Coaches are privy to everything. So you think they're going to not start flapping their gums? A team just let them go? That's what's going to happen. If I had a guess, being a former reporter, that's who I would call to get dirt on them now.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Can you explain a little bit more what he meant by the gardener parading around with the pine tar?
I guess he was just making fun of the fact that, you know, it's not going to be allowed anymore, so he had a big glob of pine tar on his hat. I don't know. I mean, I lean toward what Baum said, that maybe he's just trying to loosen up the clubhouse and something that was going to be tension-filled between pitchers and hitters.
Yeah. Now, if you're right, and this was leaked out by one of the coaches that were let go, what was the end game? What story are they trying to tell here?
All is not perfect in Oz.
Right. Are they trying to tell you that Cole's a tool? Are they trying to tell you that there's a lot of tension in the room?
Or
are they trying
a lack of camaraderie among these players and just a general sort of bad energy?
Yeah, so but who takes the hit for that? Was that a shot at Cashman for the players he brought in? Was that a shot at Boone for not lightening up the atmosphere within the room? I wouldn't think that Nevin would do that to him because he's so close, but one of the other guys could. I'm just wondering, Michael, when you give up a story like that, what are you hoping to achieve?
Maybe you just want to set fire to the previous place you lived. I don't know if there's an end game.
But I always feel like there's somebody specific you have in mind. Like you're taking a shot at someone.
Don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. Maybe it's also, you know, they're blaming us, but this is what was happening. We have nothing to do with this.
Again, you're right. It's a nothing burger, but it unfortunately, nothing burgers sell for like $15.99 with the New York Yankees. Like,
I will tell you this, though. There's no way that anybody in the media would know about Joey Gallo laying his uniform out. There's no way. Well, again, we have not been in that room, so we have no idea. And the fact that Gallo reacted so sensitively to it and sent out that tweet, that, to me, of all the things, that's a little concerning. Nobody's saying that that's why you struggle, Joey. It's just maybe a window into, you know, the quirks that you have. Then it's going to be an adjustment for a guy like Joey to succeed in New York. So I'm not saying that he can't.
The two quote-unquote victims in this article are Cole and Gallo.
Yes.
Because not Brett Gardner, because Cole had to apologize to Brett. So that makes it seem like Cole did wrong. So those are the two guys that were outed in this article. So did whoever release that not like those two? Was it a shot at Cashman because Cashman traded for Gallo and signed Cole to that big contract? Like, I'm just thinking that it can't just be scorched earth to the entire organization. It's not that big of a deal. But there had to be somebody in mind when they brought these things up. And it sounds to me like they were taking a shot at Cashman. And that would make sense because that's pretty much who let him go, right? Wasn't Boone. Was it Hal? Who ended up at the end of the day handing the pink slip to those guys?
Well, I mean, they're going to say they didn't give it and their contracts were up, but it's obviously Brian who decided not to bring him back.
So does that make sense that the guy that traded for Gallo and the guy that signed Cole, is that the person that they were looking at is to bring down or make look bad?
When stuff like this comes out, the fact that you're talking this through and thinking, I mean, it should be all clean and nice and brisk, but that's not the way it is. I'll tell you this. When I finally let go, I'm going to tell all the peculiarities of you and Peter.
We know you will.
Oh, yeah. That's how.
Jam it up! You probably won't even wait. It'll be like the next day.
But you know what I'll do, though? I will not go, you know, hide behind the guise of anonymity.
No, you'll be on the record.
Oh, yeah. I'll call Marcia and listen, I got a story for you.
And I use words as tools, but as weapons.
Yeah. Give it to somebody that'll get read, Michael.
You're crazy.
Can you... I'm just trying to think, Peter, is there anything in my past, anything that I have done?
Well, think about it as I go
to
Michael
break. Hasn't brought up on the air already.
Oh, this stuff. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, great and you point. Right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
Jeff Passan, who's getting the president of baseball operations and the manager's job for the Mets?
Matt Arnold's name has been percolating around, and if he got the job, it would not shock me, but I think we're still not at the point where it's a done deal yet. He's someone who's been a lot of places. He's won. He's a guy who, as his background, is a scout, but he's also someone who, I believe, majored in economics as an undergrad, so he understands numbers, and he appreciates numbers, and I think the Mets were looking for someone who is well-rounded, and if you're looking for a well-rounded guy, Matt Arnold's resume, I think, speaks to that, and it's just going to be a question like everything, you know, how do you handle New York?
The Michael K. Show.
I had a drink bought for me last night, was convinced that it was spiked, drank it anyway.
On 98.7 ESPN.
I mean, what a career Matt Arnold has had. All these jobs with Major League Baseball. He married Roseanne. I mean,
no,
it's not that guy.
Different person.
Oh, thank you.
Poof!
I'm sorry. I gotta get that right. Speaking of numbers, this will shock you guys.
Shocking.
Now, full disclosure, okay? I felt awful last night. I feel awful today too. There was a point today where I was thinking about not doing the show. But then I didn't want to be mocked by you guys.
Yeah, because that's what we'd do if you were legitimately sick. Of all the years never calling in sick, our first reaction to you calling in sick would be to mock you. Nice.
I think so. Well, anyway, I did not watch a second of the Manning cast. First time this year.
Wow. Fail.
And it was, you know, I mean, the guests were just off the charts great. Tom Brady, Sue Bird, Drew Brees, Marshawn Lynch, I heard was cursing up a storm.
Yeah.
Well, the first Manning cast, right, drew 800,000 people. The second one, 1.856 million. Week three, 1.89 million. Whoa, trending upward, right?
Okay.
But then they took week four, five, and six off. Okay. Now week seven, 1.606. And I think the problem is, and listen, if I'm ESPN, I let them do whatever they want. If they want to do the show standing on their head, it's worth it. But taking off 3 weeks, people forget about you. That's the way the world is now. They probably forgot. They probably forgot that they were even on. So that's why they had 200,000 fewer people. And this is thanks to sports TV ratings. By the way, give sports TV ratings a blue check, would you please?
The guy deserves it.
Works he does good work.
That's my go-to for numbers. Because I'm fascinated by ratings numbers, and he does a good job. But, Michael, that's part of it. But, again, that was a compelling game. You know, it's 10-10 midway through the fourth quarter. I can't for the life of me understand how a football fan would turn off the main broadcast to watch the Mannings if the game's compelling. Now, if you get a game like Eagles-Cowboys a few weeks ago, well, then you're going to get off it because that's, you know, you're going to go on the Manning. You want to be entertained. It's a blowout game. But this game was competitive right down to the wire. So why would I need a bunch of interviews and have the game shrunk down?
Like, yeah, but Don, it was competitive because they were both inept. wasn't great football.
I understand that, but it was competitive. It was, the game was on the line. So if you love football, I'll be honest with you, and you know there's no bigger Eli Manning fan than me. I have not watched a second of the Manning cast. Not a second. Never turned it on. Not once.
Wow. Wait, for the whole time it's been on?
The whole time it's been on, I've never turned it on. Because I watch football. And for the most part, if the football's entertaining to me.
This football!
So I'm good. Now, there might be people that are casual football fans or the game just is uninteresting to them, so they have to. But why would I want to watch an interview show when I can watch a game? And if the game's compelling and I'm a big Levy guy, why would I turn that off to hear those guys yucking it up, interviewing somebody, and shrink the game down or
but it's not all yucking it up
from the game that I'm trying to enjoy.
You haven't watched it yet. How do you know what it is? It's not yucking it up. Peter, you've watched it. They talk football.
I think it's fantastic, and especially.
Well, I'm not judging you. I'm just saying I haven't even thought to turn it on.
Last night was such an unsexy game that the only reason I thought to turn on the game was because of the Manning cast.
And so it was you're saying it was a loose turtleneck game.
Oh yeah, maybe not even loose. Or maybe a completely tight turtleneck game.
No, but then it would be sexy.
Yeah, but you're so covered.
But still, it has to be a loose turtleneck.
Anyway, I think we're getting in the weeds here. But when I saw people tweeting about Marshawn Lynch cursing and just like the wackiness of the conversation, I threw it on.
Protected. What the
fuck? I don't think they're not looking good.
By the way, he kept, you know, Marshawn never remembers that you can't curse on television. And how amused Eli and Peyton were, because like they would never do something like that, was a treat. And then the Brady stuff was just awesome. I mean,
now let's go through the Brady stuff, because I think the most interesting thing is the football. We didn't get a chance to talk about this yesterday. So he throws his 300 touchdown pass. Nobody's ever done that. 600th, I'm sorry. Nobody's ever done that. And his wide receiver gives the ball to someone in the stands. Doesn't realize that it's Mike Evans, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't realize it was historic. So the guy just gives the ball. Doesn't really negotiate or anything like that, and everybody's ripping him. Now, everybody will say, you shouldn't ask for anything. It's not really yours. Well, wait a minute. I know this is going to make me sound awful, but really, you spend a lot of money to go to a game. If you have a chance to make back some of that money and get some of that money back to give something to somebody that somebody – like someone's first home run ball, I don't believe in holding it hostage. I mean, it's not worth anything. It's just worth something to that player. But this is worth a lot of money. Why shouldn't you get everything you could possibly get before you give that up? And if people want to make you out to be a bad guy, I don't recall them allowing you to come into the ballpark for free. You're paying to get in there. So now you're going to trade that seat that you had to make some money. And I give Brady credit. He got the ball almost for nothing and then realized that it was kind of shameful how he got it for almost nothing. Gave him a signed helmet, two signed jerseys, Evans a signed jersey, a signed helmet, season tickets the rest of this year, season tickets for Tampa Bay games next year as well. And then he throws this in during the Madden cast. Gave him a Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Which is worth $68,000. I think the kid did well. Don't you?
Very well.
Yeah, I mean, I heard Rothenberg this morning talking about it.
What'd he say?
You don't respect me?
He thinks that the guy got utterly ripped off because the ball could be worth as much as $500,000, and he basically got, you know, $80,000 worth of stuff. And I think for someone who just went to a game with no expectation, and literally someone just puts the ball in your lap, I think walking away with $80,000 worth of stuff, including season tickets the next 2 years, is pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's not like he had to make the catch and fight people for it. He was handed the ball. So, that is a variable on this, but I do believe that you should get as much as you can. There's none of that, well, it's really Tom Brady's ball. I paid for this seat. I got it fair and square. You want it back, you're going to have to give me something. And there have been some really good deals announced and negotiated. I think the kid did all right. If he held on to it, he probably could have gotten a lot more. But does he really want to go through all that trouble?
Yeah, I think it's a I would not be mad if I was this kid. Now, is it true that he had said he wanted to play a round of golf with Brady?
Yeah.
And Brady
denied.
Yeah,
he said that afterward. I don't know if I don't know what Brady's answer is. Pretty soon he's going to say he wants to hang out with him too.
I just want to be best friends.
Yeah, I don't think that he should get like the market value for the ball. He should get something. But to Dave, to think that he should hold out for whatever the ball is worth, that's a bit much.
Again, doesn't it kind of shed a little light on what Dave said about me? Everything's about getting more money with the guy.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just saying. Don, does that not work a little bit towards what I'm saying?
Rub my glutes.
So
seems obsessed with it.
A little bit obsessed. That's all I'm saying. You wouldn't be happy with it. Multiple signed jerseys, a Bitcoin, which is currently worth $68,000. But if you look at where Bitcoin's gone over the last 5 years, no reason to think it won't continue to go up. It's a good deal.
Like, grow up.
You grow up.
No.
Tati on Twitter says the ball was worth almost $1 million.
According to who? Who's paying $1 million for it?
I mean, the people pay $2 million for a little, you know, and whatever they are. What are they called?
NFTs?
Yeah.
But yes, sure. Things are worth crazy amounts of money. But is there really, do we know that there are people who would at this exact moment spend that much money on that ball?
Don't know. You're right. It's all a guess. But I think if you put that up for auction, you do very well.
Now, it's a different situation if Tom Brady now is going to take that ball and then sell it. But Tom's going to keep it or give it to the Hall of Fame. So nobody is making any money off that ball.
I don't think he'll give it to the Hall of Fame right now.
Now, maybe his kids will, you know, 50 years from now or whatever. But, you know, at the rate Tom's going, that's probably, he'll still be alive 50 years from now. But, yeah, I think he would have fair game at the market value if Tom was going to sell it. But Tom just wants it because it's his ball. He threw the 600th touchdown pass. So why should he get market value for it when it's not going on the market?
True. Ken Golden, the founder of Golden Auctions, estimated on Twitter that the ball is worth at minimum $500,000. So to make it a fair trade, Brady confirmed that he was sweetening the deal with some Bitcoin. I think Brady's going above and beyond. I mean, he could have just said, psych, I got it, you know. He's going to go above and beyond now. And the Bitcoin that he gave him, which was worth $68,000 at the time, I'm being told is worth $75,000 already. Peter, we got to buy some Bitcoin today.
I don't have – Natalie has lots of Ethereum. I have nothing.
You have to have Ethereum to buy it?
No. Ethereum's another one. Oh. She has some Bitcoin too, but she has more Ethereum. I got out of
it.
I bought a little bit of Bitcoin 5 years ago, got scared, sold it, never went back in. Really pathetic.
You're quite the investor, aren't you?
Literally, you have no idea how sad my investment history is.
Not sadder than mine.
But never, you've never done anything?
Well, there's one.
Yeah, I put my money in Citibank.
Well, so I'm glad to know there's someone worse than me.
Because it's unbelievable.
I've been that bad too, but at least I've only had money for a couple of years. That means you've just been wasting for years and years and years.
Yeah, but the guy who does my taxes said, you know what? I always used to think you were an idiot. He said, but if you started putting money into the stock market when you started making money, you pretty much have the same now but without the angst. He said it goes up and down, people sell, and you would have the same amount of money as you have now.
Yeah, well, no offense. You're working with a hack. If you're putting money in things like mutual funds and really safe stuff, over time you are going to make money. That I don't know anyone who over time, if they're doing it safely, has not made money.
We do that for the kids for their college.
Yeah, and it goes up. I mean, I'm a joke. I'm hiring a guy right this second. He looked at my money last year and how uninvested it was, and when he told me what I could have made versus what I did make, it was very, very upsetting to hear.
While it's sad.
But you're like me. You're scared. You'd rather stack it up.
But I have a reason why.
Why?
Because I grew up really poor, okay. And I can't imagine going back to that. And I should be happy with what I make. What I make, I could live a really nice life if I just put it in the bank. And I don't have to risk become a trillionaire. I'm okay.
I like that you said that we're doing it for different reasons. It's the exact same reason. Granted, I wouldn't ever call myself really poor, but I never understood what it was to have a lot of money. So I didn't know what you did. I don't know anything about investing. So to me, the safest play was to put it in a bank.
I'm glad we brought up this money thing because there was something I wanted to talk about that came out yesterday. So Juan DeFranco, right, the superlative young shortstop of the Tampa Bay Rays.
He's a great guy.
Showed off that, you know, he just bought like a Mercedes-Benz, right? A stylized Mercedes-Benz with his name like in the part where you step onto the car, and he's got a special steering wheel with diamonds in it, and paid like over $250,000 for it. And the only thing I could think of, this isn't ending well. Because I've talked to athletes, when you spend all your money on cars immediately depreciate the second the tire hits the street. There's no way you're going to make that money back. You're buying something that is going to lose value. Yeah. And you see these young players, and he supposedly has a Rolls Royce. Well, what are you doing? Can't somebody stop him?
No, he's got the money.
But he might not have the money then.
Cars do seem like the dumbest one to me. Like,
yeah, my dad taught me that a long time ago. I can't do it because I put too many miles on, obviously pre-pandemic. So I can't lease a car. But my father's like, never buy a car because it depreciates the second you drive it out. Like,
you buy
things that appreciate. You don't buy things that depreciate.
Well, that's the thing. It's like if a young player is really into, like, you know, classic watches or Rolexes or, you know, whatever fancy watches, most of those watches, if you don't do anything to, you know, mess them up or personalize them, they hold value.
Yeah.
They don't really go down in value. You're basically good. Cars are the one thing that you get a brand new Ferrari or Mercedes. That thing's, yeah, it's dropping in value instantaneously.
And this guy needs to have diamonds in his steering wheel? Really?
Yeah, you do need that, though.
He's 20 years old.
How old?
20 years old.
Well, that's a very 20-year-old purchase.
Yeah, he's going to regret it when he's 25. Well, but maybe he'll make so much money he won't even care.
Probably.
Let's hope that's the case.
Let the kid have some fun.
Yeah, let him get the diamond-encrusted steering wheel, Michael.
I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a tough lesson to learn, but he's going to have a lot of fun learning it.
Can I ask you a question without sounding like the old man on the lawn?
Yeah. Well, you are.
How much more fun does he have driving a diamond encrusted steering wheel than I have with a regular, you know, leather steering wheel? How much more fun is it?
I don't get it. I'm not a jewelry guy, right? But obviously it's something that he wants.
And well, there's a lot of
really
stuff that
cool
I want I don't
about
buy.
Being rich is you get to buy the things you want.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that I can afford that I won't buy,
but
and
that's
I want.
You. That's
fine,
you're
frugal.
I'm not frugal because that's another word for cheap that they taught you in Ramapo.
No, you're frugal.
Because you're somebody that, you got kids, you're thinking about the future, you want to make sure that they're taken care of, and I feel odd sometimes when I bought the football jersey.
You should.
But every once in a while, it's like, listen, I want to have it, so I'm going to buy it. But it's good to be conservative. Because you want to make sure that you leave enough money for your kids and your family. But he's 20 years old, making a ton of money. Yeah, he'll have time to start saving, and there'll be those moments where he'll realize he shouldn't do things. But let him have some fun now.
Okay.
It's why you pick up the bat in the first place.
No, it's not. You pick up the bat for the love of the game, not
love
to have
the
diamond encrusted steer wheel. Shining Wizards Kevin said the car might depreciate, but diamonds are forever.
They are. And listen, I understand the love of the game, but one of the reasons you want to make the pros and be famous is to be able to have money and buy the things that you want. That's a cool thing for him.
All right, so he's 20 years old. So when did he start to want the diamond encrusted steering wheel? When he was 12? Now, very quickly, Jeff Passan, got the attention of a lot of Yankee fans. He said that he thought that Corey Seager was going to be the shortstop for the Yankees. He's going to sign a $300 million deal. Now, I thought that the way the market was going, that what the Mets signed Lindor was going to be the outlier. But now it seems like people think that Correa is going to get $300 million and Seager's going to get $300 million. I think that's a little bit heavy, but even if it's close, it's pretty impressive. I will tell you this, and Seager fits because he's a left-handed batter, Don and Peter.
Yeah.
But if I had to choose, the best player of the lot is Carlos Correa. The best. He's right-handed. I get it. But of all those players, he's the stud. And, I know we've criticized the Yankees for being too right-handed, but when you have something where the right-hander is not a lot better, but certainly significantly better than the left-hander, I think you go with Correa, despite the fact he's on the team that gets booed all the time. I will tell you this. If the Yankees decided to go with Correa, Don and Peter, Yankee fans would give him a standing ovation on opening day. All the booing and the bleep Altuve, that would be over with because he'd be one of theirs.
I think it's just because of the left-handed thing. That has to be it.
I'm sure that's it. But is there enough of a difference in talent, or is the talent that close that you're going to take the lefty over the righty, or do you take the righty, who's, I believe, younger and a better player? Hit 279, 26 homers, 92 ribbies, and all he's done is get big hit after big hit after big hit in the postseason. That's not an easy call.
No. Also, Arthur Stapleton reporting that Jabril Peppers out for the year.
Oh, really? The knee was that bad? Oh,
suffered a rupture of his ACL in his right knee and a high ankle sprain.
Oh, wow. That's not good. Well, he just brought everybody down, Don.
But I wanted to get it out there, not to bring them down, but people want information.
It's important, Don.
All right, we'll take some phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. We've got the Knicks tonight against Sixers. We'll have that game right here, so we want you to tune in right after our show, 7 o'clock. That means another game, another no Carlin.
Listen. That hurts.
And does that mean, Don, because you know all these things, that the World Series Game 1 is on 10:50 a.m.?
Probably on 10:50, and we'll join it in progress after the basketball.
There you go.
Michael Casey on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save, it's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Well, listen up, Jet fans. Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Jets take on the Bengals this Sunday at MetLife Stadium. All you have to do is be the first caller right now at 888-987-ESPN, brought to you by the New York Jets. Get tickets to see the Jets host the Bengals Sunday, October 31st, Halloween at 1 p.m. All fans in attendance will receive a free Stealth Black Rally Towel presented by Green Giant. Lock in your seats today at nyjets.com/tickets. All right, so Don, this seems to be kind of a seismic day with the Blackhawks. What happened? And what are the ramifications of this?
Well, the story broke over the summer that there was a video coach on their first championship team in 2009-2010, Bradley Aldrich, who was the video coach, sexually assaulted one of the Blackhawk players on that Cup team. Now, he didn't play. What happens sometimes during the playoffs is when the minor league season is over, they'll call up players from the AHL affiliate, and they're called, you know, Black Aces. They'll skate with the team. They'll be healthy scratches. He was one of those players, and he was sexually assaulted by this coach. There's also allegations that he had sexually assaulted a high school player, and then there was also something that happened inside the room. I don't want to give any like details of something he did during video sessions, played pornography, all that. Just a bad guy. And he eventually left to take a coach in high school. So he left the Blackhawks soon after these incidents had taken place. But apparently they were reported to Stan Bowman, the general manager, and to McIsaacs, who was the head of hockey operations, and it went nowhere. And it was covered up, according to a recent investigation. So Stan Bowman has stepped down as general manager of the Blackhawks. McIsaac has stepped down as the head of hockey operations. Where it becomes dicey, the investigation also showed that Joel Quenneville, who had denied knowing anything, knew about it. He's now the head coach of the Florida Panthers. And Kevin Cheveldayoff, who was the assistant general manager of Chicago at the time, that he denied knowing anything about it. The investigation showed he knew. He's now the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, how do they keep their jobs?
Well, that's what we're wondering right now is how far-reaching is this? The Blackhawks were fined $2 million. Everybody that was still with the Blackhawks at the time has stepped down. I think Bowman's was his first year as general manager when these allegations first came out. But I would think, Michael, especially denying you had knowledge, now there's an investigation done that showed that you did know that I think the Florida Panthers and the Winnipeg Jets are going to be out two employees. I would think either they would resign or they would be let go by their teams.
Well, why isn't the NHL?
Well, the NHL, right? No, the NHL is going to speak to Cheveldayoff and to Quenneville. So I guess something's going to come out of that where they're going to – there. I would think at minimum there's going to be some sort of a suspension, some disciplinary action is going to happen here. That hasn't – you know, these investigation just came out today. They had the press conference at 2 o'clock Eastern time, so only a few hours removed from this. Bowman had stepped down, issued a statement, and said that he told his superiors and it went nowhere. So I guess he's kind of falling on the sort of what else am I supposed to do? It was reported to me. I reported it to my higher-up, and it never went anywhere. And then he soon left the organization. So Bowman's kind of fallen on that sword. I don't know what Quinville and Cheveldayoff are going to say, but I'm sure there'll be some sort of suspension. And I would not be surprised if both are let go. I mean, this is some serious, serious stuff here. And, again, I don't want to go into the sordid details, Michael, but this is some pretty ugly stuff. That if they knew about it and didn't do anything about it, how do you go without being disciplined? And it hurts because I know Kevin. I know Kevin pretty well, and it's devastating to know that he could have known something about it and didn't do anything. He's the assistant general manager. The general manager, his boss said he reported it higher up. So could Kevin just say, what else am I supposed to do? But the problem with Kevin and Quinville, they both denied it when asked about it.
I'm amazed that this stuff goes on in this day and age. I mean, what happened at Penn State, what happened in Michigan State, it's mind-boggling. How could somebody be so valuable to somebody that they wouldn't turn them in for doing something reprehensible? Even if they were valuable, that they've got to go. Why would you protect somebody like that?
It's just it just shows you the culture that that you could just so easily just say, all right, listen, I reported it and kind of move on from it. And when you see nothing happened, we talked about this during the Penn State scandal. At what point do you say, hello, did anybody do anything? Is anything happening here? And then you wonder why these victims don't speak up. Now, we don't know who the player is. He's, you know, in the reports, he's been either identified as John Doe or Black Ace 1 because he was one of the Black Aces.
Is he playing now?
We don't know who the player is. We have no idea. He was a part of the investigation. I guess there are people within the NHL circles that know, because after the incident had taken place, there were reports that there were some players that were like bringing it up and asking him about it. So this was known. This was known within the team that this incident had happened. And nothing ever was done about it. The coach was never disciplined. As I said, he moved on, pretty scary, moved on to become a coach in high school.
Has he been identified?
Yeah, that's Bradbury.
Does he still have the job in high school?
No, I'm still seeing what happened. I think I'm sure he's lost these jobs. These are investigations, and these allegations are pretty serious. But I don't know right now what's happened with him.
And I was reading a lot of people criticizing, well, why'd the NHL just fine the Blackhawks $2 million? Well, again, people always forget this. The commissioner works for the owners at their discretion. There's only a certain amount of money that they could fine them. That's why Manfred only fined the Astros $5 million. There's a limit. You think the person that you hire to run the sport is then going to slap you on the wrist to the point that $20 million, they wouldn't allow it. I'm sure that Bettman doesn't have the authority to fine more than $2 million.
But there have been instances like where the Devils, when they gave the they violated the salary cap, giving Ilya Kovalchuk a contract.
Right.
They were fined $3 million. You know, so we've seen teams get fined for more.
Well, then they should be fined for more then.
But I wonder if this $2 million, because of the full cooperation that the Blackhawks got behind this with the investigation, and I don't know. You're right. You work this owner, and Wirtz is the owner. Whether his relationship with Gary Bettman, how he cooperated with, I don't know where they came up with the $2 million, whether it's $2 million or $10 million, Michael, it's a drop in the bucket for these teams.
Can you imagine though, protecting a video coach? A video coach. Well, why are you protecting anybody? First of all, a video coach who I would assume is fungible.
Isn't that the craziest thing?
Yes.
These positions that you're like, what? Why?
You know what's scary, guys? We look at it as protecting the masseur or protecting the video coach. Is it that, or is it just the culture of just within these organizations of just not wanting to be that guy to squeal or not believing the victim and just not taking it seriously enough? That I think that's even scarier, that somebody can have that happen to them, and that just whether it's a lack of belief
Or, oh, give me a break. Come on. It's, get out of here. That didn't happen. Or is it just, we don't want to get involved in this. It's your word against his, so it'll just be easier to, you know, get rid of the player or whatever. And then he ended up leaving to take a job immediately after, so it's not our problem. So is it really protecting these fungible positions, or is it just not really taking this whole thing seriously? Either way, no matter what it is, it's ugly and it's sordid and it's disgusting.
All right, let's go to more lighter fare. We'll have ENN coming up in just a moment with Peter, so stick around for that. You know the number, 1-800-919-3776. ENN coming up next on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.